La loba, which is Spanish for wood woman. La loba is expression and dance, a magical mind, limitless chance. My true calling, wild and free, grant me the power, wisdom, and instinct to see. Help me acquire a creative mind, seek for truth, and so you shall find. Resurrect me to the wideness within, my soul's journey and yours akin. Be my mentor, my guidance, my limitless mind, my higher self, my spirit, mankind. La loba envelops my heart, heightens my soul, keeps me yearning for more, stories untold. Collective thoughts of passion rebirth, pursue me, La loba, on this time on earth. Scent of wood burning fills my hair, your wildest fragrance dances on air. Close my eyes, sing a song of ancient rhymes, my inner rhythms, primal times. I'll wear a dress of flames for you, my eyes will burn with passion true. I yearn for you on this earthly flight, my creative fire and forest burns bright. Lisa, this is your verse. Teach me psych and magic, joyous things, open my eyes, release my wings. I'm connected, endeavored, created by you, heal me, seal me, love me true.
Jenny. Next up is Donna Coogan. Donna.
Getting the colour. It's Saturday, mid-July, and I'm 16. I'm down the back garden, out of the shadow of the house, a blanket stretched out on cut grass, eyes closed, my body spreading in the sun. Sounds travel from other gardens. I know who's out. Lolly Hines walks the cement path next door. Mr. Gumbriel knocks out beasts in his workshop. Bobby barking loudly four doors away. The rise and fall of the metal latch and the barrett side gate. 18 semis in a row. I could describe the hedges between each, have crawled through all of them playing games of hide and seek and tip the can. Most families here brought their country landscapes into these city suburbs when they first planted fuchsia, mumbrisia, honeysuckle, and the small pink cherry rosebush. An oasis of heat and hum, turning face to the sky. My job is to toast to myself even. Tonight I'll go dancing. Passing on. Last time I saw my dad, he was sitting up in his paisley patterned flannel pajamas. The back frame of the bed opened out with two pillows behind him, bed facing into the centre of the ward, a ward for six men. Smiling and waving us off, my ma and I was 19 of his 62 years, and we turned at the door and waved back, catapulting kisses, leaving with the baton of confidence that he had passed to me. His unique off-key rendition of the opening lines of Don't Cry For Me, Argentina, forever downloaded to my brain. Little did we know, my ma and me, that was our last look, our last laugh, our last hope, our last time to hear him. The man who we loved to listen to, loved to be with, who filled up every room with his ease. If only. We walked from the Mater down to Marlborough Street to catch the number 30 bus that took us along the coast road home to Clontarf. We were delighted that, by coincidence, my boyfriend, who I later married, was on the bus too. So he traveled home with us, and I lit the fire. I made tea and toast, while Kieran made us both laugh. We planned our hospital visit for the next day, lucky to have the bus terminus at the end of our road. Then we watched them telly. And so my life moved from one lovely man to another. But if only I could have just 5 more minutes with my dad.
Thanks so much. Here's Jennifer Matthews. Thank you.
Edwin. It's called Requiem, but I reworked this morning. The gardener is gone, and flowers are gossiping. Birds' false starts flutter above their feeder that spills, where the bully squirrels scavenge. Dinner is half done. The coffee's muttering while okra falls apart and hot sauce scalds raw chicken. Places still need to be set. The old boy is home, suspenders, blue and pipe smoke, a TV is on, men battering each other, he's waiting to be called in. Grand's in the spare room, among dusted flowers, crime novels, and daughters who survived, they knew to find her in a bed meant for guests.
There's about 20 words left. That's your time limit warning. Next up is Malcolm.
Hey, this is short. It's called Echo Wounds. We pass judgment, we walk the same street. We know who we are, but we question our feet. We switch off when we want to switch back. There's no power, it's black. We watch the same moon as Orion's belt tightens. We drink the same water, so why are we frightened? The cloud cover quickens, our heart starts to race. You cannot win this, you'll have to look in our face.
Next up, the wonderful Mary O'Connell. She's in the back. Mary O'Connell.
Hi. This is called Spaced Out. We often read that some poor dope who smokes a bit of weed has grown a patch of cannabis to serve his private need. But in North Cork, quite recently, they had a startling find. The fuzz came on an inside job that fairly blew their mind. When they targeted a cottage, they were told to case the joint, but found they needed to get high to really prove their point and keep them out of sight. So placed them in 2 rooms upstairs with plenty heat and light. Not good old splits and reefers. This guy mixed a heady brew, creme de grasse, and hash brown biscuits for the cultivated few. Marijuana flavoured goodies, the kind everybody likes, were bought by dozy neighbours who toppled off their bikes. This thriving cottage industry has now become unstuck. Begrudgers simply grassed on him because he took pot nuts.
Regular
Let's call the last spaghetti junction. Spaghetti junctions are a chair that loudly soothes your weight, your forearm blossoms with smoke with your overdrawn cigarette. Is it just me, or did I see the joke? All the streets have now disappeared, parlance being your indolence without sweet debauchery. But you are just another fashion statement, a license to be born somewhat like a walking abortion, starting along your spaghetti junction, twisted and turned into a beautiful shape that well becomes you. The value of danger. At once, my enemy, a blank page, stares at me, an organized mess of rosin columns, droppings, and loose pages of indolence. What I have purport to have achieved is thrown back at me, remembering how I forged my own lines, cartoon cruel, I become the worshipper of my own ignorance. Scaling through the library steps, the lips are broken again, I, ribbed, sweaty, my silence protected by a mobile ring, 10-year-old fine or else. Fine, I won't do it again. I will wash my mouth out with Guinness. For to be truly Irish, one must obey our stereotypes, no matter how well we are fed. The leprechaun dances in the soft corner of the gift shop, grown tacky with demand. Sorry to insult your vanity, but things never worked out that way. With the pale-tinted urges bursting onto an image of reckoning, I will hold the light in the corner to beckon a return to form.
Welcome return for Rosin Bloom.
Me and Micros. Me and Micros, anyway. I'm very happy to bring you my newest poem, which is literally just finished last week, and here it is. The Writer. I am the writer who does not write. If everything is repeat, all is analyzed, criticized, specified, all explained, defined, described, all expressed and talked and captured. What can I say? What's left to write? What does remain? I'm a paper without a pen. I'm a writer who does not write. I am the ear that does not hear. Just noise of cities, echo, waves of traffic through the air, ads and news and ads and lies, seduction, war, deceit and more. I no more hear the voice which sounds in silence, drowned in a flood of words around. So I'm a voice without a song. I'm the writer who does not write. I am a mouth that does not speak. Too much talk, empty talk, words with holes, the goal is gold. Blasting round earth, zipping through space, web babbles leaking, cybertext whizzing, computer, www. Who listens and whose answers matter? Opposing opinions, an ongoing battle. What party do your poems push? I'm a mouth that does not speak. I'm the writer who does not write. I'm the eye that does not see, clouded by the isms of academy, as formalism blocks the mind. Rationalism with theory blind, no sense for reality. What do we see? Bombs, corruption, catastrophes, global warming, money laundering, the cuts, you're fired, no job, no home. Not one word counted, no justice to see in the stronghold of names playing games. I'm the eye that does not see. I'm a writer who does not write. I'm the hand that does not do. When politics do their politics, every day politics touch us. Whittling down into homes, rattling families to their bones, keeping us busy and down as they make wars elsewhere. So there is suffering. Oh, the damage done when one hand washes the other and the left does not see what the right hand does. So what is there for me to do? I am a writer who does not write. I am the writer who's writing these words. What is the power of poetry? Let's be analytical, critical, political. Keep the muscles flexing. Get the music singing. Get the rhythm swinging. And get the point across. Speak the mind that comes to see all mistakes repeated from last century. Take on the spiritual responsibility of shaping life to the consciousness of Earth. I am the writer who writes these words.
Thank you, Rosalind. We have Maria Colvin.
You ease into the seat without looking at me. Poirot on the TV twitches his moustache. The barman brings over the tea. You say it's not me, that it's you. Friends is what we should be. Silver drops bead on the teapot, then stream small rivers of pain. As the brew cools, the tannin congeals. You leave, light-footed and free. Lumumba, what my dog told me. Called after the peaceful Congolese leader whose name rumbled from our wireless. Black and white sheepdog, he was thick-set, paws like caked riverbeds, pungent with earth smell. He jumped through grain fields rising the pheasants. Mice and voles ran before his charge. He was a lion in his Serengeti. When he went missing, I lit candles, recited Golden Hail Marys. Father said he may have strayed. Others told of Tilke's camping at the crossroads. I pictured him tied to a caravan wheel, straining to return to me. Setting out to the fields to accost them, my mother laid a gentle hand upon my shoulder. Lumumba was a ringleader, a killer of defenseless sheep. Think of the lambs, she said.
And an announcement that I didn't make a while ago. On the 12th of April, as you know, we'll be launching the third volume of the Five Word Anthology, but also an extra facet of that night, things that are going to make it a little different. The poems that we read will not be poems that we've written ourselves. Those of us, or those of you who choose to read a poem that night, you must choose a poem written by another author. You can choose anybody you want, or any song you want, or any short story you want, or anything you want, once it's not written by you. It'll be a night of other people's poetry. That's on the 12th of April, coinciding with the launch of the third volume of the Five Word Anthology. Next up is Anita Gabriel. Anita.
Not only your mouth or your eyes, but your whole body smiles as the girl with the curly hair greets you. When your foot begins to paw the ground in helpless enjoyment, and your shoulders twist at the warmth of her smile, and your limbs jump quite of their own accord. Smile breaks your face into a thousand creases, and skeletal boughs are transformed by sun into a thousand delicate buds. Well, you can have her. You were meant to be mine, if she let you, tacky bastard.
Cheers, Nina. Can we get Edward Ward? Edward Ward.
Quick one that could be about Joe Sweeney. Then again, all poetry could be about Joe Sweeney. It's called Noyan. Each day, he'd sit by the piano composing beautiful music, the waste paper basket beside him full with his most recent life's work. Some say that when asked once, Who inspires him? He answered no one. Called Mozart, the Beatles, Dylan and Sinatra, all failures. Pausing a few seconds before adding that the only task of a musician is to create a sound even sweeter than the silence he breaks. Anything less, he knows, is mere noise. For the past 20 years now, he's been meaning to take an afternoon off, call by his neighbors to apologize. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. We have Miriam Kessie. Miriam.
Diana, huntress for the hunted and the haunted, whose weapons were only little darts of energy, chasers to kill pain, hatred, fear, and death. From the depths of a poorly world, she practiced and practiced. She perfected the passion of that pure and terrifying aim from her beautiful champion eyes. The blood meat her was running. This terrible innocence could not be born. Baited in Carlisle, the hounds saw her dear heart bleed. The heavens were thrown open as golden Aurora, mother of the new morning, welcomed Diana, her breast child, home. Thank you.
A slight break from the poetry. I think we're going to add a song to my own quality.
Well, me name is Sissa Mick McClure, and the story I'll tell you of the girl who I admired called Katie Donahue. She was fair and fat and sparty, and believe me when I say that whenever I came into her house, you could hear her mammy say, "Johnny, get up from the fire, get up and give the man a seat. Can't you see that she's courting your sister Kate?" Well. Well, don't you know very well we own the farm, a wee bit out the town. Yerry, get up out of that, you ignorant patter, that Mr. Reverse the sound. Diddly out, the deedle out, the deedle out, the deedle out. Diddly out, the deedle out, the deedle out, the deedle out. Don't you know very well he owns the farm, a wee bit out the town. Yerry, get up out of that, you ignorant patter, that Mr. Reverse the sound. Well, the first time that I met her at the dancing harmony, well, I kindly asked her would she maybe dance a step with me. Then I asked her if I'd walk her home, seeing as it was on my way. And when I came into the house, you could hear her mammy say, "Johnny, get up from the fire, get up and give the man a seat. Can't you see that he's courting your sister, Kate? Don't you know very well he owns the farm, a wee bit out of the town. Yerry, get up out of that, you ignorant patting at Mr. McGuire's the town." Ah, well, now that we are married, sure, she's quickly changed her tune. And when I come now, just because we've spent the legacy your father left behind, well, she hasn't got the date and feet to bid me time of day. And whenever I come into her house, you can hear the old one say, "Oh, Johnny, come up to the fire, come up, you're sitting in the dust. Don't you see it's only old McGuire, he's raising me half-staff. I don't know what it's into him, he's always on the tear. Yeah, I just stay where you are, and every is there to give old McGuire the chair. Diddly out, the deedle out, the deedle out, the deedle out. Diddly out, the deedle out, the deedle out, the deedle out. I don't know what gets into him, he's always on the tear. Yeah, I just stay where you are, and every is there to give old McGuire the chair."
We have Michael O'Donnell. Michael O'Donnell.
I was enjoying that last song, Owen McGuire. Terrible brigading organ. They found out he'd no farm, so he got rid of him.
This is a ballad, actually, written by a friend of mine, Eric Gavin, and he wrote it sitting inside in this chibi in the Tower Road. Today we call them wine houses, I'm sure you know. But they were cider houses. And he sat in there at the moment, at the time, and he was reading this. He had actually just been released from hospital because he'd been two Mondays, one for the cook in this scenario, you know, where he was taking the boat trip or something. But anyway, he sat inside and he wrote this. On Harrow Road a tavern stood, its furnishes were rough and rude. The clients likewise, rude and rough, they never knew they had enough. And desperados fast and loose in five fermented apple juice. Red Biddy too, they mixed in this, and women steeped in wine and sin would tap you gently for a drink, and if one refused, an eye would wink. A sorry tough would cross the floor, so Stitchy's head was stained with gore. And chairs would fly and glasses smash, and barmen ran to guard the cash, while some more sober comfort taught. While some more sober comfort sought, a tankard served as chamber pot. The battles raged with shrieks of pain, and language lurid and profane, until upon the call of time, the cops arrived to conquer crime. They each at random grabbed his man, and tried to load him on the van, while some succeeded, some did not, and most were kicked by what they caught. But this was how this pub was run. The place of a cider, sin and fun. Now some would say it was a sin to shatter that romantic end. Another something else alarms, he prayed preserved the junction arms from homeless waifs of late abode, the cider house on Harrow Road.
Now we're going to get a preview of Terry Murray's new collection, Where the Doctor Dances. Terry Murray.
This particular poem is in the new collection. It's called Street of Booksellers. Normally I write in sort of cycles, so it was this time of the year that this poem was written. It was written in Madrid. I'm awful sorry I didn't buy the Salvador Dali by Lorca, but I put it down at the time, it was only something like €2. It's one of these regrets that you have that you didn't sort of act on impulse. The street of booksellers. On Claudia Viana in Madrid, I am 16 again, alone and wondrously complete, as I brazen through the dandelion market on a Sunday after Mass. Somewhere in the distance, a busker is caterwauling Cohen. Near the College of Surgeons, the traders are setting up their stalls, fingers as deft as guests to shell men. Broad bends are splintering under a burning of old penny journals, spines held by goggles of gravity and glue. Red triangles folding the page, hardbacks are shedding swatches of old soap sugar paper, some shrugging off dust, jacket skins, golden letters smoothed to copper. Prices are penciled on fly leaves above the names and addresses of former possessors. Ciphers fade into black to dun. Ancient red volumes dressed in leather could have been tamed from the tamed brown bull. Somewhere in Retiro Park, a busker is caterwauling coal. I long to buy the ode to Salvadori, but then the language of Lorca. It's a closed book to me. Thank you.
Thank you. And Terry will launch her new collection at the Lockbarn on the 12th of April, I believe. Next, we have Paula Manning. Paula Manning.
This is Canto 16 of 33 cantos in an epic poem set last November. I'll read you the beginning of it. The return into Cork was flaky. A rush through Shannon, a dash down the road, a blink, and new two-pot house was left behind. Mallow was swimming, Clonakilty was underwater. All the talk was of the hand of Henri, cheating of the shaving cream, a referee fireman from Sweden, a minister for justice indignant at the injustice, how our poor country could be robbed of an inheritance we'd surely deserve from a single performance. The country was up in arms, the bankers, developers, speculators, even the politicians. None of them, even all of them, in cahoots, had managed to galvanize the people half as much as a skinny frog brought up on emails. On the matter of a ball of wind, all fell over themselves with honesty, integrity, decent upbringing of children, the moral dilemma. How do you bring up a child that knows right from wrong when you let the bad guy win with his flat palm, with his double handling of the football? Prometheus Unbound, Ireland's Miltonic moment, harvests the malcontent into a fighting force to change the course of the Sepp Blatter, Amazon man Michel Platini, henchman, the international French conspiracy to rig the result, to put us all into negative equity for the rest of our lives. Diaspora comes to life. New York Times, Melbourne Gazette, Birmingham Times. Don't forget your indignation if you want to come to work, Brian. Even the great turd stirred. The FAI and BNI merged in their demands for attention. The man with the moleskin drove on through reams of precipitation and indignation. By the time he reached the jury, the hostelry by the Lee, there was more incitement from the spectators than from every evicted family. The famine saw the houses torn, the children put on a cattle track, the relentless forced onto a boat. The famine was a dismal failure of potatoes. It was the undoing of those lines. Survivors gain, diaspora reign, let's all go off to America in the rusty bottom of a tin vessel, fixed for cattle, barely a fuss. This time we will not be moved, we will not be robbed or fobbed off by pundits with reason. We want a rematch. History we run. We may have let the flight force us from our hovels, but never again will we fail to swim against the tide of apathy. We have our sword raised, our temperature boiled. Those video replays better evidence of the apparition than any lures needed to become a shrine. Our Lady has appeared. Kathleen, Roisin, Drisheen, the patina of Fatima abounds. There is no force on earth that can stop the march of the righteous man who would be a South African. Thank you.
Oh, with a poem and I'm guessing a few laughs as well, if we're lucky, it's Christy Parthick. Christy.
Didn't know what to read there, and then somebody mentioned Joe Sweeney, so I said, well, I got a poem for that. Called The Addict. Here's an alcoholic, drug-addicted, gambling addict with an over-reliance on food and a fetish for shoes. You can't see. A religious zealot whose depressions were manic and an arsonist whose chain-smoking was old news. He had agoraphobia and was hooked on sex, and they kept him in their tendencies he could not avoid to help his long-term inferiority complex, which allow his hypochondria that's him paranoid. One night as his insomnia kept him awake and he struggled with his allergy to bedridden, he swore it was his habit that for his mother's sake he would seek help and would suffer no more. Soon he was attending self-help meetings by the double. Every day and night he was part of some group or session that gathered in rooms anonymously and traded every trouble. He grew to love spilling his soul to an audience with discretion. He cherished the camaraderie, love, and benevolence of people he adored. Life felt so good in these rooms of people unburdening woes. His self-esteem was repeatedly restored and soared as the joy of life filled his veins from head to toes. One by one, he beat his dependencies on alcohol, gambling, narcotics, depression, fear of heights, bouts of low, sniffing leather, bulimia, and nose-picking went, as did his affinity for antibiotics. Nothing had ever, ever beaten group therapy for making him feel better. Then one day, cutbacks. His nail-biting group was cut short. He felt faint. When everyone else has forgotten about the acute amnesia group, he cried. His nausea reminded him of when he first drank paint after the necrophobia treatment program he lived for. That died. Whenever a precious gathering ended, he grew more agitated. Cold sweats and palpitations accompanied his angst-filled beatings, that he was no longer able to discuss matters therapy-related. Then dawned the terrible truth. He had become addicted to meetings. He began attending court cases to feed his new addiction. He showed up sweating at the funerals of people he never knew. He gave crashed dressing rooms and inquests, causing friction. He queued idly in post offices. Any troubled crowd would do. He drank picket lines and bus juice to further his kicks. He ran for council, hoping to feed monthly his tendency. When he lashed onto a rugby scrum for a quick but dangerous fix, he realised he needed rehabilitation for his unfortunate dependency. In desperation, he formed MA, Meetings Anonymous. For people addicted to gatherings could be helped by staying away. Hundreds of addicts would avoid every meeting as MA became synonymous with aiding people not alone and being unable to be alone every day. Within a year, he was able to cope with dividing crowds. He was the man who could cope without anything, including stimulation. Now he sits alone all day, staring out the window at the passing crowds. He hasn't yet admitted it, mind, but he'd be lost without his daily meditation. Thank you. That's all I'm reading for you.
And as usual, there'll be a decorative rosary for Joe Sweeney after the reading. Go, Harding. Go.
Monday night, to face all these Cork people. They were relegated in the hurling. Well, we were all joking. There's headlines going on in the papers at the moment which are very disturbing, and people don't seem to be mentioning or saying anything about it. They hope it will go away, but it's not going to go away.
Justin.
Mm-hmm. He should go away. Called a pedophile. May you burn at the stake of tender sticks, wafted slightly by a still furious breeze, very slowly consuming your feet and calves, your screaming loud before it hits the knees. The tender child screamed before those flames. The heart is dying, but the rage is raging. Young hearts are young, but young in names. And the young names are aging, aging, aging. And now the flames creep slowly towards the groin, caress your trembling thighs like a viper's tongue. Not much for the old dead to be dying, but the dying ones to be the young. Little boy, your magic eyes are glowing upon your baby sister's curls and smiles. You see nothing but her beauty, and unknowing, something watches. Blood flows upon the tiles. May your teeth grind to mulch when the flames roast your testicles like chestnuts upon a London street. May you be sodomized by the vilest sodomites roaming Satan's corridors with hooves upon their feet. In your hell, eternity is too short a time, and all the time you have is worth having, while here on earth you leave behind your crime of the undead. They are left to go on living. Thanks. This is called Victim, January 15th, 2008. On that day, a paedophile walked out of the Supreme Court after victory on some technical point. first verse is your man speaking, and the second verse is victim, and alternates. No one knows me. After all, I can prowl. Goldilocks will never know until I am satiated. Nothing else matters, and the secret is fastened by a dog. Who can I tell? No one would believe me. Why? Devils like that do not exist. Anyway, it's my fault. I encouraged them. No, the awful nightmares will not leave me. There is no register, and from town to town I can go and gain someone else's trust. This I must do. Must do. I surely must. And inevitably break down that. And inevitably break that trust down. I trust nobody now. No one at all. My heart is broken into piercing shards. In the restless hours, the mumbled words that wish to scream out just idle on and stall. But I go on and on. I must go on. There are no other thrills there for me. Little faces, boy or girl, then my loneliness will at least for one short time be gone. Where can I go now in this bleak land? I see the normal people come and go. Our secret will remain until the snow returns, our Cinderella with a sparkling wand. Thanks.
Thanks, Bob. Unfortunately, many people will relate to the poems of that nature. Next is Paul Cato.
I finished this last week. I haven't read it in Cork, but I've read it in Limerick and Galway already, so people here have heard it. So, see if you can guess what year I'm referring to in Limerick and Galway, please. So, One Monday in the Bonds for my mother, Renee Casey, name at the mine. A year after Kavanagh died, a bench was set down by the banks of the Grand Canal, and St. Phelan plunged into the sea. Derry Battens charged against civil rights, and the troubles began up north. The troubles began. Wexford took tip at Croke Park with the ash, and we won no medals in Mexico that year, where students were lying dead over cheap lunches. Paul VI of Rome condemned birth control. 3/5 of all graduates left, tears in the old sod, the year men entered orbit around the moon. Protests raged across the world for Vietnam, while the My Lai massacre was kept silent. In the year the Soviets invaded Czechoslovakia, Jackie married Aristotle, and Mswati took Swaziland. Harold the Brave of Norway married a commoner, the daughter of a wood merchant, now queen. The Rodney riots rocked Jamaica that year. John and Yoko, criminalized for smoking the green, Mauritius and the steam engine, were finally freed from the filed down fingernails of an imperious dream. Martin Luther King Jr. was shot dead in Memphis, Robert Kennedy in LA, Andy Warhol took 3 feminist bullets, and Yale made its secrets gender-free. Aretha sang Think, the Beatles' Hey Jude. It was in the year the height of Cork County Hall was reached, that 3 milkweed butterflies somehow appeared on the coasts of Ballycotton and Cape Clear, monarchs from somewhere across the sea. There'd be neither gossip nor question, for on their first wedding anniversary, I was born in the bonds by the Lee. Under pristine high ceilings, above wide classic designs on shined up tiles and the finely beveled oak banisters, forgotten in the gleaming urgency of light flooded stairways and unwashed windows. On a midsummer Sunday morning, she was taken in a lift to the very top, where he was not permitted to boo, no doctor or anesthetic either, a watch nurse on a chair whose knitting between contractions grew like a distant beard, it seemed, to the floor. down along the length of 36 endless hours to a disgruntled, exiled, and wrinkly 6 pounds of me. Perhaps you've dreamt that since, you say, and after 3 days the little dears shuffled in hushed tones. Something was amiss. They kept you wondering for what seemed an eternity. All, it turned out, for a curious birthmark, some omen. I can see your sigh of relief, the fading readiness to summon hell. Opus was the first word I heard my mother exclaim. So just perhaps I may have dreamt that since.
We're all glad Maggie's here. This is a short poem called Dogs and Girlfriends. Be careful with this one. A cynical comedian I heard say once, if you wanted to see who loved you most, was it your girlfriend or your dog, you locked both of them in the boot of your car for a couple of hours, and when you open it up, which of them wants to see you, which of them happened to see you. So this is kind of a reflection on the same sort of thing, if you like. Dogs and girlfriends. A dog may be your best friend, but is often much more than that. Unlike your girlfriend, his bite is much worse than his bark. He likes it when you leave lots of things on the floor. He knows when you are pissed off and have had enough. And even if he leaves, doesn't take more than half your stuff. And when you're late and stagger in through the door, he is delighted to meet you. Finds you amusing when you're drunk. And likes to ride in the back of a pickup truck. If he smells another dog on you, he won't get mad. He's more than happy and thrilled and even glad. It's not that every dog is exactly just the same, but he doesn't mind if you call them by another name. And if she has puppies, you can sell them or give them away. Despite this, he is ready for you 24 hours every day. But best of all, he will not wake you up in the middle of your sleep. When John of Dreams is enthralling you in slumber deep, he will not wake you and in your enchanted mental fog ask you with anguish, if I died, would you go and get another dog?